The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, good evening, everyone, and welcome back to our Intro to Meditation course. And those of you who can hopefully remember, last week I taught you the three-breath meditation. Sometimes I've called it the three-journey meditation. Would any of you use it during the week? Did you try it at all, or did you? Yeah. And how was it to use it during the week? Any nice experiences of that, or? No nice experiences.
Any bad experiences?
So, okay. And how about with meditation in general? Some of you meditate during this week and with the instructions and breath and body that we've had so far. And anybody like to say a little bit what that was like, or any questions came out of that or concerns?
Excuse me. I just had a question about the sound meditation, yes, following the sound. So when I generally do some meditation in the morning, and there's always either car going by or some construction going on. So I feel I have to keep switching to different sounds. I have to keep switching to different sounds, yeah, that are going on.
Yeah.
So I'm not really sure if that's helpful in actually doing concentrating on one or two things rather than so sometimes a car is more. So you have a car going by, and then suddenly there's no noise, and suddenly the second car goes by, or then the construction starts, and then there's that noise, and that goes away. So I'm not sure how easy it is to kind of just keep switching back between different sounds that go on, and then also having feeling that you've actually done some meditation rather than just trying to figure out what sound is coming and then trying to switch to those sounds.
Great, good. It's very nice that you asked that. So the listening meditation first and foremost, it's a meditation about staying in the present moment. And sounds are always going to be in the present moment. You know, that's where they are. So if you're present for those, you're training yourself to be here rather than in your thoughts about the future and the past. And and then also it's a training in being relaxed about how we listen. It's not a concentration practice. Concentration practice is where you stay on one thing and don't leave it. Here, the training is to stay receptive and relaxed, knowing that the sounds will come from different directions at different times. Different kinds of sounds will come. And rather than getting too absorbed in one or concerned with one, or rather than kind of feeling annoyed that something's, the construction work is starting, the idea is to try to stay relaxed and open, receptive in whatever way it comes. And in doing that, some people find it beneficial. First, it keeps them, for some people, it keeps them much more easily in the present moment than with the breathing. And the other thing it does is it's you don't really control the sounds. So some people find this get very relaxed by listening. It's outside the world of their control, the sounds. And they're just allowing it to come and go whatever way it wants. It's kind of like a symphony. And they relax and just take in the sounds. And so it helps people. Some people get very much in the present, out of their head and their thoughts, and very this relaxed, receptive awareness. So that's the goal. So does that give you some idea that in response to your concern? Or
yes, it does. But I'm not really sure how to do it. I mean, one time you're trying to focus on the breath itself, and then doing that, and also allowing the sound to come through is very hard to kind of.
Yes.
Okay. No. What? Because you're trying to focus on the breath and try to listen to your breath.
Right.
And suddenly a sound is coming. So are you supposed to?
I got it.
How are you supposed to not listen to it and still listen to it? And
I see.
That's the question.
So if you do hearing listening meditation, you would not be doing breath meditation. If you it would just be the listening, so to keep it easy. But the basic instructions that I'm giving here would be to use the breath as the foundation. It's a default. You're cultivating both present moment awareness and some concentration and calm by staying with the breath. And we only leave the breath if something else is more compelling. And the compelling is a little bit arbitrary. What's compelling? It's partly your interest and other things. But what's most compelling? So if you're able to stay with the breath relatively easy, and there's a lot of sounds around you, you can just ignore the sounds. You don't have to do anything with them at all. You'll only do mindfulness of the listening if there's a strong pull in that direction. If it starts being a tension or a little fight inside of you, you're trying to stay with the breath. But really, what's really happening, it's really predominant, is the sound. Then you would just calmly let go of the breath and turn and just do listening meditation, as long as that's compelling. So the same thing is true for other sensations in the body. If there's a knee pain as you're sitting, then if it's not such a big deal, it's easy to stay with the breath, just stay with the breath. But when it becomes a big enough deal that you feel that tension between the breath and this other thing, then we let go of the breath and we go and bring our mindfulness to that thing in the body. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Great.
So I want to share an observation I had when I meditated this week. So I'm not sure if that's common. So what I recognized was I get lost in thought intermittently. But then when I remember that, when I'm back, so I recognize that I'm lost in thought. So I just recognize that there's a pattern. So first, my mind checks what are the sounds. So for example, the fridge, right? There's a monotonous sound. Or there are other sounds that are kind of monotonous, but I don't hear them after a while. So, but when I come back from being lost in thought, so first my mind checks the sounds around, and then after that, a body scan happens. I don't know why. It's probably we had this lesson.
I missed one word. What happens?
A body scan. So I'm start.
A body sensation happens.
Not sensation, but I think I thought maybe it was because last week we had this lesson on body sensations. So I'm kind of looking for, is there something in the body compelling that I should pay attention to? And then if there's no pain, nothing, again, I'm back to breathing until I get lost in thought again. Mm-hmm. So it's just an interesting pattern.
And you find that helpful, that pattern, to come to your body and then to your breathing?
I think so. It's more about, it's just an interesting observation, I thought.
Great. That's a nice, I think, nice. I kind of feel you never go wrong by coming into the present moment with your body. So if that's where you're coming back from your thoughts, coming to your body, that's a great place to be, and then go to your breathing. If you don't know where to go, anytime you don't know where your attention should be, go to your breathing. So you don't have to think and wonder and guess and analyze, where should I be paying attention to? If it's not obvious, be with your breath. So this idea that you would... So the analogy of this for this practice is, imagine a spider web with a spider sitting in the middle of the web. And the spider is quite content there, and then something else happens on the web. Some insect lands on it. Then the spider leaves the center and attends to whatever happened there. And when it's finished attending to it, it comes back to the center. So the breathing is kind of like the center. And a sound, really loud sound happens, and so the mind goes and is present for that little bit, and then comes back to the breath. A strong sensation in the body happens, and it goes to it. And then after it's no longer compelling, or it feels like it's taken care of or something, we come back to the breath. And today I'll talk about emotions. There can be a compelling, strong emotion, and then that becomes the meditation. And then we're always coming back to the breath whenever it makes sense. But what you're doing, sounds like, is you're going off in thought. When you notice that, you just come back to your body, check out your body, and then you go back to it. I think it's a great choice. I like it.
One observation I had while trying to pay attention to breath is just that... during the inhale and exhale, I can sort of stay in the moment, but then... usually the pause between breaths is where I sort of lose it.
Great. That's
almost
great,
consistently.
That's a great observation. So there's a couple of things you can do. One is, now that you know that, in the pause, kind of tune up your attention to kind of like stay, hang in there for the present. Don't let the thoughts take over. Don't relax your attention. and just kind of like make sure you kind of hang in there to get to the other, to the next breath. That's one. The other, which is how I was taught in Burma, if the pause is long enough, in the same kind of rhythm in which you're breathing in and out, so in a relaxed way, go find some place where some part of your body is touching some other part of the body. If your hands are touching like this, your hands are on your thighs, and feel what it's called the touch point. Go feel where there's physical contact being made and feel the sensations there. Some people use this contact of the lips touching. And so the idea being that you always want to have at this point in the meditation, you always want to have a physical sensation where your mind kind of takes in, is receptive to, and be present for. So you have the physical sensations of breathing, and then if there's a pause, you find some physical sensation in your body, a contact point, where your knees touch the mat or your floor, feet against the floor. So you go in, out, touch, in, out, touch, kind of whatever speed, you know. So it's kind of a relaxed thing. If the pause is really long, then you'd go and do touch. Like you might first feel the sensations of your hands touching on the right hand and then the left hand. And that gives them, as long as the mind is filled with sensations that in the present moment, it's less likely to wander off in thought. Does that make sense? Now, it's a very interesting observation to notice when the mind wanders off in thought. So sometimes people, if there's a gap, not everyone has a gap between their in-breath. Most often, gap is most often at the end of the out-breath before the in-breath, but it can be in both sides. But some people don't have a gap, and that's fine. But some people find a very common place where the mind wanders off in thought is near the end of the out-breath. There's kind of a letting go, a kind of relaxing, a kind of giving up there. And so that's a place where the mind doesn't know what to do. If it's not paying attention to something, well, then it should think. It's an idle mind will begin to think. And so if you notice, that's a pattern, that every time at the end of the out-breath, as your out-breath finishes, that's where the mind goes off. Then just brighten up the attention there. Just try to be really attentive to that little period so you can get through it without wandering off, without straining or, you know, getting tense around it. Okay, so the word for this kind of meditation practice in the ancient Buddhist language is vipassana. You don't have to learn it. But the passana part of it means to see. And the V is kind of an emphatic prefix. And some people will translate it, we translate it here at IMC as insight. But some people will translate it as clear seeing. And clear seeing, the idea of what we're trying to cultivate is the ability to see clearly. And there's a lot of ways in which we don't see clearly. We see through the filter of our preferences, we see through the filter of our likes and dislikes, through our ideas of things, and all kinds of things that we see it through. But to see it clearly for itself. And the analogy I like for this is that if you're trying to find your way in maybe a larger room with a lot of things that you've never been there before, but it's dark and you're supposed to get somehow to the other side, I think that the distance your attention goes in the dark is just as far as you can feel. You know, I might, if I was in that, kind of be really careful. I might hunch over a little bit and really be kind of careful and feel and what's there and take really little steps to make sure I don't bump into something and stretch out my hand. And I'm really kind of engaged, you know, in a close kind of, I don't know, sleuthing way or something. And then someone comes along and notices what I'm doing and say, well, that's not necessary. And they turn on the light. And suddenly, I can stand up straight. I don't have to be so careful and shuffling my feet. And suddenly, it's like I see clearly what's there. And my whole stance, my posture, my demeanor, the way I am in the world, immediately change. Because I can now clearly see the room, the objects, what's there. And there's a whole different way to be. So a little bit that analogy applies to us in this meditation practice. Some of us, you know, live in these rooms of our past, the rooms of the future, caught up in our fantasy. And some of us are kind of a little bit walking in the dark with it. We're caught up in it, we're lost in it, we're preoccupied with it. And when we are clearly mindful, there's this clear seeing, it's kind of like you turn on the light. In fact, if you ask some people who have been practicing this for a while, an interesting exercise is to ask them, when you've noticed you're wandered off in thought, just as soon as you notice that's happening, notice what the quality of the mind has been, how you're like on the inside. And people report things like, well, everything was dark, everything was contracted and tight. And when I clearly could come back into mindfulness, it felt more like there was space, it was more luminous, light without light, kind of clarity. And it was kind of like there was much more space for everything in a mind that's mindful. And then they get lost again in thought, and everything kind of gets in this small little claustrophobic world. And so we're cultivating is clear seeing. And another way of calling that is clear recognition, to clearly recognize what is actually happening. So what wouldn't be clear recognizing would be something like, you know, this is a wooden platform. It's a wooden platform, and it has some stains on it, and I wonder who put the hot stuff on here. They probably shouldn't have done it, and I don't even know if I should have used this kind of wood for IMC, and I wonder what kind of different wood we'll use next time we build a platform. I'm kind of lost in my thoughts, and you're probably getting bored with my train of thought. And but the clear seeing would be, oh, look, there's a wooden platform with a stain. Clearly see that's what's going on without all the judgments and ideas and what should happen. Clear platform and a stain. Just whew, that's what it is. And there's something about in the mind, so it's, you know, it's kind of a small, silly thing to say, you know, stain on a platform. But there's something about the mind, the movement, the recognition of the mind, when it's really clear, without a strain, but really clear, it's kind of like someone turns on the light. Because we're no longer entangled with it. We're no longer caught up in it or preoccupied with it and judging it and what's in it for me and a clear stain on the teaching platform and all you people now think I'm, you know, third-class teacher to have a stained platform to sit on and now I'm caught up in this whole world of my status in front of all of you because, you know, that, you know, there's no clear seeing there. But if I see my mind doing that and I say, Gil, you're worried about your status. That's what's happening. Clear status concern. Fear about what people think of me. There's this clarity. Oh, that's what's happening. Boom. And in the mind, the act of recognition, there's something, can be something where the light goes on. It's a hard thing to recognize sometimes because we're so concerned often about what we're thinking about. And what's in it for us and who we are in relationship to it. But that's kind of a little bit the movement we're trying to cultivate. So this movement of practice of cultivating breath meditation certainly is to help us get stable, calm down, get focused in the present moment. But it's also what we're doing, we're kind of beginning to slowly cultivate that ability as we're in the present moment to see clearly what's here. And you might feel kind of why the breath? That seems pretty boring. The breath actually gets more and more interesting the longer you do this. It's fascinating, the breathing. But as you learn to do with the breath, you learn to do with other things as well. And it becomes particularly important when we come to emotions. Emotions, it can also be very important with strong discomfort in the body or even strong pleasure in the body. We get so easily entangled with it. But to step back and, oh, you know, I'm just holding on to my pleasure. I'm caught up in it and planning vacations around it and trying to tell my friends about how wonderful meditation is, as opposed to, oh, there's pleasure here. There's pleasure. Keep it that simple. And in doing that, feeling the light goes on. Oh, there's pleasure here. And maybe that sense of the benefit and the wonderfulness of that light going on, that clear recognition, won't be clear immediately, but hopefully as you do this practice, you'll get a sense, oh, that's where my freedom is. That's where I'm no longer entangled. That's where I can be present for what's going on with a kind of accepting, non-reactive awareness. And I can see it much more clearly. We can see things more clearly when the light's on. So there's a 1 second, maybe second and a half meditation that can be done. And that maybe, hopefully, maybe points to, gives you some sense how this works. So first, before we do that 1.5 second meditation, close your eyes. You don't have to change your posture much. It's going to be short. 1.5 seconds is not long. And take a couple of moments first and check in with yourself to see how you're feeling. What's your mood, your emotional status? How are you? And then, is there some word or name of how you're feeling? Tired, sad, contented, annoyed, happy, delighted. Whatever it might be. And then, with that word of recognition, if you can't be sure that you have a word that names it, just use the word something. Something's happening here. Something. So with that word and your mind, see if you can clearly recognize, oh, this is what's happening. In a second and a half, just, oh, this is what's happening. With such clarity, oh, that's what's happening. And why don't you do it maybe 2 or 3 more times? Just do it in an easygoing way. It's pauses between. Maybe how you feel changes. But you kind of see if you can do this second and a half meditation of clearly recognizing, oh, that's what's happening for me. That's how I am. Okay, so then you can open your eyes. So was that 1.5 seconds meditation, was that interesting for any of you? Did anything shift in 1.5 seconds by having that clear recognition as you could do it? What happened to you? Anything that was different or interesting? If you could please use the mic.
I find that it lets you let it go. You can move to a different space. You don't get stuck.
That's great. So clear recognition helps you let it go.
Yeah, I felt freedom. Yes, uh-huh. Yes, that was very nice.
Nice.
I felt not having to name it and just saying something is happening very helpful, because I get so involved in trying to see, am I just sad, or am I extremely sad, or am I this or that, and just more thinking.
Great,
and this
yes.
was just a little less thinking.
Wonderful. I'm glad you learned that, because it is to keep this really simple. So if there's not an obvious name, something is great. My default for a little while, when things were really kind of this is the word I used to have this clear recognition, that kind of like the last resort or something, chaos.
I think the third time it felt like compassion for myself, but in a gentle way, not like this desperate way, yeah. But more like, okay, that's how I feel, and it's good I recognize it. It's like some kind of compassion.
So just doing that clear recognition brought some compassion,
yeah.
For you. Wonderful. So these are nice stories they're telling. I'm a little surprised, happily surprised at the nice things that people are reporting. But you're welcome to say it was difficult or did nothing or made you, was horrible. It's nice to know, you know, what's happening in the room.
I think I felt exactly the same as I was feeling previously, but it kind of like sunk into it. Mm. So I kind of just felt like I was submerged in that feeling, whereas before I felt kind of like fluttering about it.
Ah, it's a little so scattered kind of around it. And then
I guess the clarity for me was just more of a foggy, just kind of a sinking into it.
And that felt good? Like you were grounded, you in it? Or
no, I just think it felt closer.
Closer.
Like a little bit more of like more just intimate? Feeling it more intimately. Yeah.
Great. Well, that could be very nice.
I think I felt more anxious, and I mean, I spent a lot of time denying the things I'm feeling. So it's want to face.
You don't want to clearly recognize.
Yeah,
this is fantastic that you know that about yourself. So sometimes it takes years for people to realize that they're, and you're in a beginning class when you realize that. It's really a good thing to stop ignoring it. It might be very difficult, some of the things people are carrying with them from their life and from their difficulty, all kinds of things. I don't want to underestimate the difficulties that can, and the difficult emotions and memories and issues that people have that are there. And there's good reason, because it can be so painful sometimes that people are ignoring things. So I want to be respectful of that. This path of mindfulness is a powerful path of going through that, of meeting it with compassion and clarity, making space for it, and generally it just helps things to resolve and open up. And sometimes you need a little support for it from a teacher or someone else, but you know, many people I've gone through this, very difficult things with the mindfulness. I've come to have tremendous faith in the mindfulness practice to do this sometimes very difficult work of keep staying present for things which are difficult, rather than escaping or ignoring them. So, if this becomes a bigger issue for you, you're welcome after class to talk to me a little bit. But it's a good path you're on if you're willing to take it. Okay, one more.
I know a second and a half was kind of quick, but I find when I get into meditation, it's like, you know, you have these blinders, the first curtain of dark gray, and then the darker curtain. So it's like, you know, when you're either getting your eye checked and you have the, you know, darker until you, so by second and a half, I'm just like getting into that mm-hmm. first curtain.
Yeah, yeah. So maybe second half was too fast, and maybe 3 seconds you could do whatever long it takes for you is fine. Sometimes all it takes is a second. That's what's happening. Sometimes it takes longer, but that's the direction we're going. And I chose to use that short period of time to kind of make the point that it doesn't have to take a long time to do this practice. It isn't that you don't have to cut up. You don't have to be too involved with, oh, I have to settle down and get concentrated and. You know, and spend all this time getting into a good state. There's really great benefits that happen in a very brief moment, but you know, it might take you a few moments more. It's fine. I would like to ask you one more question, and that is, I think hopefully you understand what I'm talking about here, by the simplicity of this clear recognition that comes without a lot of associated thinking and judgment, and what other extra baggage. Extra things might come along that's not really needed for clear seeing, that we might bring along with us in an attempt to see something clearly. Do you have any, what makes your seeing not clear?
Anxiety.
So if you're caught in anxiety, you might not see clearly. Yes?
Thinking about other people.
Caught up in other people, that's a big rabbit hole for some people. Yes?
Analyzing
it, yes. Other ideas of what, you might, yes?
Judging yourself.
Judging yourself when you, yes. Mm-hmm. anger about it. So these are, this is great, and this the example of anxiety and anger is right to the point of what we're doing today with emotions. So it's possible. The interesting thing you can do, you can, like, you know, like I could be looking at this platform top and the stain, and I just don't, I see it to stain, but as I see it, I'm just, you know, angry and anxious that it's there or that we have it here, and you know. And so I'm not seeing it very clearly. It's mixed up with my anger or anxiety around it. But the interesting thing I can do is I can turn around and have clear recognition that I'm anxious. Oh, I'm anxious. Or, oh, I'm angry. So rather than being angry that I'm angry or anxious that I'm anxious, it's possible to turn that clear recognition around to the emotion, say, oh, that's what's happening. And there's some freedom that can be found there. It doesn't necessarily make it go away, but it doesn't have to go away to find a degree of freedom that comes from this clear recognition. Oh, that's what's happening. Makes a little bit of sense? Okay. So I'd like to tell a story, and then we'll do the meditation. And in the meditation, I'll give the instructions for working with emotions. And then repeat them afterwards. The story comes from the Buddha a long time ago. And the Buddha was sitting with a group of people, and he said to them, if someone comes along with a bow and arrow and shoots another person, the person who gets pierced by the arrow, is that painful for that person? And the audience said, oh yes, that's painful. If the archer then comes and shoots a second arrow at the same person and pierces them a second time, would that be even more painful? And they said, oh yeah, that's even more painful, of course. And then the Buddha said, something like this, is paraphrasing him, is that the first arrow is what life does to you. The second arrow is the one you shoot at yourself. So for example, if I'm walking down the sidewalk here and I trip, that's can be expected. You know, we occasionally do that. That happens. Who knows why I trip. But then the second arrow would be, Gil, you're a terrible walker. You're an embarrassment to walking people. You should probably never walk in public again. I'm just like shooting all these arrows at myself. And So we can't stop certain things. Your back goes out, you get sick. This morning the parking brake and my car broke and it was making this grinding noise in my wheel. That's the first arrow. So what do we, you know, what's the second arrow? You know, all kinds of things I could have done, but I'd learned just to let it be the first arrow. Look, it's, I have an appointment, I'm going to be late for my appointment, I guess I'll have to call the person and tell them I'll be late, and I'll have to take care of this car thing. I'll take it to the mechanic. And is it okay to drive it? This ratcheting sound. So I wasn't adding any second arrows, but I could have easily added a whole slew of second arrows. So life causes all kinds of difficulties for us. And this practice, this clear recognition practice, can help us to see what's going on, help us to see the second arrows we're adding to it, and then help us to kind of maybe stop doing it. Many people are not adding just one arrow, a second arrow. Some people have a second arrow, and then they do a third arrow on that. So I'm walking down the street, I trip, that's the first arrow. I'm a terrible walker, that's the second arrow. But I'm a Buddhist meditation teacher. Not only should I walk mindfully and not trip, but I shouldn't have this kind of terrible self-judgment about it. I'm a lousy teacher. This third arrow goes. And it goes on and on, you know, and then, well, I guess I didn't really study with very good teachers. Those teachers really messed me up. I didn't really, you know, they didn't do their job. And so I'm kind of shooting arrows at myself to say that. And then it goes on and on and on from there, right? So some people live at the 152nd generation of arrows. They're just like, you know, it's just one reaction on top of another, another. It's like quite painful and sad the way it works. Clear recognition is to stop shooting arrows. It doesn't matter if you're at the 1,000th generation of arrows or if you're at the 2nd generation. A really clear act of seeing, and there's no more arrows. That's pretty cool, especially if you start seeing how much arrows the mind keeps shooting out. So with that as an introduction to the sitting, so take a meditation posture. And then taking a little bit in a posture which is a little bit more alert with your spine, upright with your spine, than you usually would do. Gently close your eyes. And then gently take a few long, slow, deep breaths. And the advantage, possibility of taking a deep in-breath is to feel your ribcage expand, your shoulders lift, kind of like you're getting a massage from the inside. And as you exhale, relax, soften your body. And then perhaps now you can let your breathing return to normal. And scan through your body. And see if there's any muscles that are easy enough to relax further. You might be able to soften the face. Some people find it helpful to drop the mouth open and then float the teeth back together, especially if there's tension in the jaw. It might be possible to soften in the shoulders, maybe as you exhale. As you exhale, let the weight of the shoulders feel the pull of gravity. And then this can be helpful to soften the belly, which for some people means to let the belly kind of fall forward and hang out a little bit. Or perhaps let the whole belly area kind of let go so it kind of settles more deeper into the pelvic cavity. And then as you're sitting here, notice now, how are you? What's your mood, your emotional state? What feelings are moving through you, emotional feelings? And if you have, if it's really easy that you have a name for it, the name for that kind of state, you can do this few moments of this clear recognition in the best that you can, just letting it be there, allowing it to be there, but to clearly recognize this is how you are. And then, if the emotional state is still here for you, or another one has replaced it, see, look through your body and see if there's any place where this emotion resides in your body, this mood, mental state is in your body. Any part of your body that's energized, or whether there's tension or heat or sensations. Some people might feel like anger in the belly or fear in the chest, or happiness in their cheeks. And then let yourself feel, if you notice it, the bodily side of the emotions. How it's expressed in your body. And notice, if you can, if there's any complications about how you know it's there. Is there judgment, or attempts to analyze it, or to avoid it, push it away, or hold on to it, to congratulate yourself, or put yourself down? And see if you can let that kind of, those kinds of secondary, maybe arrows even, fall to the side. So you can come to a clear recognition of how you're feeling. Almost as if how you're feeling has complete permission to be there. Doesn't have to be any different, it's okay. Your job is just clearly to know it, and if it's available, clearly to sense or feel what it's like in your body to have that state. And then, notice how your body experiences breathing. And in as relaxed way as you can, have some clear recognition of breathing. A clear seeing of the inhale just as an inhale as it's happening. A clear seeing of the exhale. And as you're with your breathing in and out, you might kind of rest the attention on the sensations of breathing. So there's kind of intimacy with the physical sensations of breathing, and letting yourself be affected, calmed, and pulled in to the experience of breathing by the rhythm of breathing in and breathing out. And then as you're sitting here meditating on your breathing, if there are compelling sensations in your body that occur, you can let go of focus on your breathing in a relaxed way. Bring the clear recognition to the body sensation. And as you recognize it clearly, feel it intimately. And if the body sensation is not so compelling, return to the breathing or stay with your breathing. And if there's an emotion, mental state or mood, which is compelling, you can also let go of the breathing and do the emotion meditation, where you would recognize that it's there. You would allow it to be there. You would feel how it feels in your body to have the state. And you would tease apart the extra reactivity, the extra arrows, extra work that's more than simply recognizing and being present for what's happening. And if whatever emotion might be there is not compelling, you can always be with your breathing. Breathing in and breathing out. Trusting yourself with the breathing. Entrusting yourself with the breathing. And then in the last couple of minutes of this sitting, check in with yourself. And then is there anything that's happening here for you now that would be useful to clearly recognize and accept its presence? Not to fight it or avoid it or judge it. Clearly recognize and allow it to be there in the open space of clear recognition. And then to end the sitting, you can take a few long, slow, deep breaths. Feel your body against the chair or the floor or your cushion. Remember you're here in this room. And when you're ready, you can open your eyes. So emotions are a very important part of human life. And one of the salient features of mindfulness meditation is to be very respectful of emotions. There's no emotions, for the purposes of mindfulness meditation, there's no emotions which are not allowed to be there. No emotions which are considered wrong or bad to have. And so it's one of the few places, because you're kind of committed for the duration of your meditation to not really move a lot, it's one of the, and, you know, cause any problems for the world. It's one of the few places maybe where it's meant to be really safe to let whatever emotions that are there, to make them space and allow them to be there. It's fine to have murderous rage in meditation. I mean, someplace you need to have it be, if you have it. And you sit quietly, and from the outside it looks like you're an angel. But you just let it pour. Or have fear just move through you. Impatience. or joy or happiness. But the art of it is not to get entangled with it. Just to give it, allow it to be there, but don't be for it or against it. And you might say, well, Gil, I understand not being for or against the difficult things, but what's wrong with being for the joy and the pleasure of meditation? There's nothing really that wrong with it, except you're not learning how to stay in the world of clear recognition, that freedom, because now you're operating in your preferences, what you want and what you like. And it's safe enough to have a nice, happy feeling of meditation to want it and lean into it, but you're not training yourself to stay independent, stay free, to stay in this mode of allowing, which is a powerful thing to do. And it enables all kinds of deeper things to begin to unfold and move through, and deeper layers of freedom to happen, that it's so much better than the particular nice feeling of the moment. But so emotions, so we allow emotions, we respect them, and I use the word respect on purpose because the Latin roots of the word means to look again. If you respect something, you give it a second look. And so with emotions, we give it a second look. We look at it clearly, this clear recognition of this is what's happening. And it could be as simple as that, 1.5 second meditation. You're sitting meditating with your breathing and something happens emotionally and you turn towards it and recognize it. And that might be enough. And then you go back to your breathing. But sometimes these emotions are stronger and it's useful to just assume that they need your attention. They need you. And if they're strong enough to have your attention, assume they need you. They need you to bring attention to them, the respect to them, to look again. And so we make them the object of our mindfulness. They're just as valid object for attention as our breathing. But it's harder with emotions to stay disentangled. With breathing, it's a little bit, maybe, I don't know if it's the right language, but a little bit more impersonal. Our emotions are often very personal. And so we tend to get pulled into it and want to do something with it or fix them or take credit for them or don't take credit for them or do something. It's very complicated, the world. And so sometimes it's just better to stay with your breathing. If you feel like you're going to get pulled into a complicated relationship with your emotions, maybe it's better just stay with you. Take a moment to clearly recognize you're having it, the emotion, and then go just back to your breathing. Just breathe and chill out and cool. Some people find it helpful to imagine as they're breathing through the difficult emotion. And that way they're connected to the breathing, so they're less likely to get pulled into the entangled world of the emotional. Often one way to get entangled into the world of emotions is we get pulled into the story that's associated with it. That my boss said X and tomorrow I'm going to say Y as opposed to I'm sitting here and clearly recognize I'm angry. I'm just angry. The word just is fantastic for meditation. I'm just angry. As opposed to, oh, I'm so angry, and that boss of mine, I'm going to... then you're caught, right? But if you're just angry, you're allowed to be angry. Just angry. And so we're looking for that clear recognition, and we're also looking, as we're doing this, to allow it to be there. And to give permission to be there. And that's for difficult emotions, it's hard for some people to do. And some people have very strong family, societal, cultural, even religious ideas that certain emotions are not okay to have. Like you're a bad person if you have it, it's the wrong thing to do. And it's very strong kind of feelings about it. And there's a lot of associations people have with emotions and their presence and what it means and what's going to happen if I have it. And that makes it all very complicated. And probably more complicated than it needs to be. It can be a lot of second arrows that are done with emotions. And so even really good ones. And so the idea is, this idea of giving permission to be there and allowing to be there, I'm not saying is an easy thing to do. But that's kind of the direction. It's a direction, that's pointing towards a kind of radical simplicity with how we are in the moment. That is kind of... you know, it's so radically simple, it's often difficult to even trust that that's okay. And isn't that boring? Or isn't that, you know, aren't they going to take over? Or isn't something terrible going to happen? Or, I don't know, or I'm going to miss out on all the important things. I'm just radically simple here with the emotion. So all kinds of things come into play. And so we're trying to learn to stay with it and stay simple, to allow it to be there. The reason why I talk about emotions after the instructions of mindfulness of the body is that if you can then start feeling the emotion in the body, the physical corollary of it, how it's expressed energetically or physically, and almost all emotions have some physical expression to them, though they might be very subtle at times, you can't always find it. And but sometimes it's really clear. You can see on people's faces, you know, their anger, or, you know, it's like, there it is. You know, the muscles of the face get all scrunched up, or the eyebrows go up, or the stomach feels tight or in knots, or, you know, shoulders go up a little bit and they're tense. And so all these places the emotions are stored. There's a heat that's moving through us. There's restless energy that's happening. And what's interesting about the physical corollary of the emotion, this physical side of it, is that it's not a story. It's just physical sensations. And if you can ground yourself in the physical sensations of the emotion, it's sometimes a lot easier to stay present for the emotion without getting pulled into the storyline. Because that's not helpful for us in this meditation, to get caught up in the stories and then kind of leaving the world of mindfulness. And so to just stay with the body, how you feel in the body, and feel it. And one of the nice things about feeling emotions in the body, it's kind of like making room for the emotion, and you allow them to be there and feel them. It's kind of like making room for the emotions in order to move out the way they want to move out, to unfold, to process themselves. The amazing things about human emotions is that they know what to do for themselves. They know how to kind of finish up, process themselves, if we can get out of the way. Many people's emotional lives are kind of like marbles in a bowl. If you drop the marble on the side of the bowl, and the momentum is going to go out of it after a while and come to rest at the bottom, unless you come along and keep pushing the marble. Most emotions, if you get out of the way and stop pushing them, getting involved with them and reviewing the story and getting upset again and again, most emotions will calm down. And that's especially true of what Buddhists call the afflictive emotions, the ones that are painful to have. They'll calm down if we stop feeding them and doing them. So this idea of allowing and feeling them and not getting involved in the story is actually quite powerful. And things begin to shift, sometimes very quickly. And and then the fourth step is this teasing apart. This means that you look and try to see while you're with the emotion, is there any extra things you're doing that's more than it's needed, that's more than just clear recognition and clear feeling what's here? Is there judgment? Is there attempt to analyze? Is there future thinking around it? Is there just avoiding it entirely by going into fantasy? Is there, you know, what's extra? Are there second arrows, third arrows? And see if you can separate that out from the actual experience. Those of you who were here last week, we talked about how the commentary or the mood music in the mind can really affect our experience of what's going on there. What we're trying to do is separate out the mood music, or separate out the commentary in a sense, so we can see clearly without the influence of the commentator. And so to tease away the judgments, the stories, the interpretations we have of the emotion, and just let it be there very, very simple, it's also kind of liberating to do that. And it makes it a lot easier to be with it, just to be with the simplicity of it. So these four steps make a wonderful acronym called RAFT, which I first heard from Tanya, who's sitting here, who told me about this RAFT, using the RAFT. And Tanya also teaches mindfulness, so it was wonderful for me to learn this, hear this from her. And RAFT. So if you have a strong emotion coming up, remember RAFT. Get on the RAFT. So recognize, allow, feel, and tease apart. So you kind of keep that in the back of your back pocket, and if your strong emotions come up and you want to try to be present for it, and that little those four steps might you don't have to do them sequentially, but that's probably a nice sequence. Might be a helpful way of kind of helping you kind of stay present and find your way with them without being swept away with them or caught up in them or reactive to them, and just recognize, allow it to be there, feel it physically, and then tease apart all the extra little reactivities that go on so you see them clearly for what they are. It sounds very easy. It's kind of simple for me to say this. Just do the raft, you know. You know, emotions are, it can be quite complicated part of our world, and you know, inner world and the ecology of our world. And so it's, what's the benefit of this simple four-step process is that the process, the practice, those ideas are simple. And so, but to actually do it with the complicated inner life that we have is not necessarily so obviously easy to do. But that's why we practice and practice and practice and do this, and we get better and better. And I think one of the real richnesses and delights and joys of meditation for me is this freedom that the meditation has given me, the freedom that the meditation has allowed for this inner emotional life to unfold. That I give lots of room for my emotions now, in a way that I didn't when I was young. And the stronger the emotion reaction I have, the more I want to meditate and just let it kind of course through me and process and unfold. So in this regard, it may be a little interesting for you to know that, if you didn't know this, that the Latin roots, Latin meaning of the word emotion, you can remember it has the word motion in it, right? You ever think about that? The E means out. In Latin, prefix, it means moving out. Emotions just want to move out. They want to kind of do their thing, but we freeze up around them. We lock up. We hold on. We resist them, and judge them, and squash them down, and hide them in the basement. All kinds of things we do. So it's a wonderful thing to do this emotion thing. So I talked a lot. When we did that meditation, and I asked a couple of times there, I asked you to check in with your emotions or mood, and what was that like for you to do that in meditation? What was interesting for you in doing that?
A question and an answer to your source.
I have a question and answer to what you just asked. I mean, I was very happy when I did it, you know, but two things that happened is, one, that I see abstract pictures with colors, and the other thing that I found myself, I was singing, rehearsing, you know, it just happens, you know, and that made me very happy, you know, and I didn't want to get rid of that. I mean, I wanted to continue, you know, to see these things.
Uh-huh.
And when you said, look in your, or feel in your body where it happens, I realized I was smiling.
Nice.
Yeah, but I mean, that you don't want us to do that. You want us to recognize and then let it go. Or, I mean, this is a good kind of, you know, feelings. I understand.
You don't have to let it go, but if it wants to go, allow it to go.
Okay, I don't know if it wanted to go. It kept coming. I mean, these lovely abstract, you know, pictures were there, and so the singing was going on, like, you
great.
Know.
Great, great. So if what you want to do is stay in the meditation practice, if that's, you know, you really want to stay in it, that's fine. That what happened to you is fine. What you would do is clearly recognize, I'm seeing. Images, I'm seeing. Oh, that's what's images out there. I'm seeing them. As opposed to leaning into it, oh, that's so great. Oh, wonderful. Oh, I wonder if I can make a watercolor on this. It's just like, just seeing. And with the singing, that's just like think. That's a variation of thinking. So we're going to do that next week. So you're a little bit of a, you know,
What do I do with it, though?
You're a bit precocious.
Oh, thank you.
Wait for next week. But what we would do is you would just recognize singing. Singing is happening. That's what's happening. I'm singing. As opposed to leaning into the singing and singing better. And let's, just recognize, oh, that's what's happening. And there's a kind of a freedom, a kind of separate, kind of a spaciousness that happens. And you might discover that there are subtle ways you are actually, in fact, feeding the singing, encouraging it. And then you learn to stop encouraging it. And maybe it fades away, maybe it doesn't, but that's not your job to care. That's just extra thinking, that's baggage. To have a preference that which way it goes is extra. To allow it to go if it wants to go as you stop feeding it, that's part of the practice.
Okay, and what about smiling? Because you directed us to
Exactly, I did. And the Buddha smiling too. Involuntary smiling can be a byproduct of meditation practice. There's good feelings. As people get into meditation, understand how to do it, and they get into a rhythm or into a flow with it, it's very common for very pleasant and joyful sensations and feelings to start moving through us. And that one of the effects of that can be that the lips begin to smile. Just allow it.
So is it possible that I was really meditating and not feeding into the song and not feeding into the pictures?
Let's assume that's the case, so you feel encouraged. let's keep practicing and see what you learn.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, I think the first day I was here, I kind of made the point: you can't do this meditation practice wrong. So just do the best you can. Don't bother with the second arrow of I'm doing it wrong. Just keep noticing. If you keep coming back to this recognition, what's happening? Clear recognition. You can't go wrong. It'll all unfold in its own time.
So I was looking for emotion, and I felt like an absence of emotion.
Uh-huh.
I just felt tension. I sort of like I could feel tension in my face, and I couldn't really trace where it's from or why. But
yes.
Just like.
So, because I was teaching emotion, that's why the instructions were to look for it if it was there. It's fine not to have it. And we don't go looking for things in meditation usually. But today I did to try to get you the idea of it. But sooner or later you will have an emotion. And when it does, try this, what we did today. But you don't have to go looking for it. And different people have different emotional lives. Some people, have intense emotional lives, and that's how they're processed. That's how they just somehow they were built. And some people, are much more even. And I'm from Norway, right? So I don't know. And I lived in Italy growing up. So there's a big difference.
My experience was the emotion part was chaotic, and I think it was chaotic because I wasn't sure what the underlying emotion was. So there was one instance, so something at work, was good, I was happy, but then at the end I concluded that I was greedy, and therefore, at the end I found something bad about it. So too much analysis.
Yeah, maybe too much analysis, so... So all those things might have come out sooner or later that you had seen them and learned them, but you didn't have to analyze to find them. So I think if you kept really simple with it and then just let them slowly unfold, then you might have learned what you sooner or later you'll learn what you need to learn, but you don't have to be in a hurry, you don't have to do so much work analyzing it. And the advantage of not doing that, that's useful to do, analyzing. Analyzing is an important part of life. So if something difficult goes on in work, maybe you need to go for a walk and think about it. That's a reasonable thing to do. But try not to do it in meditation because you're trying to let some different inner process. There's a kind of inner wisdom that can operate. It's that can't operate so much if we're always involved personally with all the issues and everything is personal, everything's dramatic, everything's this concern and all that. The body, the heart, the inner life, it knows what needs to come. And so if we get out of the way, just do the practice and clear recognition, let things be as they are, and stay present for it, what comes up sooner or later is what needs to come up.
I have another question. So when I meditate before this class, I think similar to what you just said. So I don't get to emotions. So, but my question is, if we are just focusing on breathing,
uh-huh.
and so simple breathing, and then so how does that lead to wisdom? What is the mechanism that, you know, emotions? It sounds more complicated. You know, we're so obviously some of the bad emotions clutter our thinking or prevents us from seeing things clearly. But then if you're just not touching emotions most of the time and focusing on our breathing, so what is the mechanism that it leads to the wisdom? So simple
wisdom.
Breathing. Yeah.
I think that as we get more calm, tranquility and clear seeing is the soil from which wisdom comes. Anxious, restlessness, not really seeing what's going on, not really understanding what's going on, is the recipe for ignorance, for foolishness. But if you're sitting there waiting for the wisdom to come like a cat at the mouse door, you'll probably wait a long time. Yes, in the back. Use the mic.
I was wondering if you could perhaps explain a little bit more and give a couple of examples of what teasing apart is, uh-huh. and how it's different than just like feeling the emotion in your body.
For example, it might be as simple as you're feeling it, feeling lots of energy in your body. But you're also at the same time having this whole conversation with your boss that triggered all those feelings in your body. And you're remembering the boss said X and you said Y, and then he said that, and then she said that. You know, but if you can tease apart the story-making mind and just the basic sensations happening, then the story doesn't have such a big influence on the body and the emotion. It's opinions. I'm a storyteller. There I am telling a story over and over again. I wonder how accurate my storytelling is. And it's kind of, so that would be an example of teasing it apart. Another would be teasing apart the emotion from our preferences. Because our preferences sometimes can be so insidious that we don't even see that there are preferences. There's subtle kind of, this is wrong, this is bad, I want to push this away. Or this is good, I want to have this. And so we see, oh, there's preference here. I want something, I don't want something. So we see that going on. And then we can have emotions about the emotions. There can be anger, and then there can be fear of the anger. And so when you say, what else is going on here? And we can say, oh, look, there's actually two things happening here. And then you say, well, which one needs my attention now? What should I bring and really feel and be present for? And maybe you were feeling the fear first, but it turns out really what needs your attention is the anger, or it could be vice versa. Are these examples work for you?
Yeah.
But the art of this is to be very careful not to be analyzing. Don't spend a lot of time at this work. Don't say, I'm supposed to tease apart and let me spend 5 minutes figuring out what this, you know. It's supposed to be like, you know, it's more like just try to open up and say, what else is going on here? And if it's not obvious, don't keep looking. And if it's not so compelling the idea of meditation is try to keep it as simple as you can. Don't try to do too much analyzing and figuring it out. And the default, to keep it simple, just come back to your breathing. And the other default is only be with what's obvious. So if it's not obvious, you're not responsible for it. Because sooner or later, if it's not obvious but important, it will become obvious. And you're not in a hurry. There's no hurry here. Tanya, right here in front.
You know, I'm beginning to make the connection with body, mind, and emotion. It was funny, I started, and the guided meditation does help. So I started with the feeling of sadness. The emotion was sadness, PG&E, climate change, what's happening, the worry, the sadness. And then the bodily sensation, focusing on the bodily sensations, I felt the pain. I wasn't sitting as comfortably as I would normally. So I felt the pain in my inner leg and concentrated on the pain and focus, you know. And then I tried not to take the second arrow, saying, yes, accept the pain. So I think some of these analogies did help me. But I was, that whole thinking of emotion, the sadness and the pain, how did it kind of become intertwined?
That's interesting.
I was trying to tease it apart saying, okay, the sensation, bodily sensation, maybe is manifesting itself.
Could be, or they could be unrelated, just happening at the same time. What struck me about your sadness was you were sad, but then you gave the reasons for some of the reasons you're sad. You know, the PG&E and climate change. So that can be reasonable. Just see, oh, that's why I'm sad. And it's very simple and straightforward, and that's why. Or it could be that as you're sitting feeling sad, you're telling yourself climate change stories. You're reminding yourself, and oh, there's this thing, there's this thing, and there's the heat and the cold and the icebergs and the polar bears, and you know, and you're like just reminding yourself, and you're sinking and sinking. So that's where the teasing apart is important. So it's very simple to say, oh, I'm sad, and it's because I was, you know, I'm sad because of climate change. And just keep it that simple. And don't keep telling yourself climate change stories.
But do you think the pain in my, say, leg was kind of reflective of the state of mind?
It's possible, but you said you weren't sitting in the same way you usually sit. Mm-hmm. So I assumed it just was structural. It had to do with how you're sitting. Mm-hmm. That was my assumption when you told me.
Mm. I kind of correlated it.
And sometimes our human ability to correlate is the extra. You know, we love to make stories. We love to, you know, tie things together and make things more than they simply are. I'll tell you a story. A friend of mine was going to go to the San Francisco Zen Center, big Zen Center in San Francisco. They had, I think that may still have it, but they had a couple of guest rooms that people could rent, you know, for the day, a couple of nights. So it was a nice place to go. You get to, you know, rent a little monastic cell in a monastery. So it's, if you're into that kind of thing, it's nice. And so my friend called up San Francisco Zen Center and said, I'd like to rent a room and come spend a few nights there. And the person in the office said, well, you have to talk to the guest manager, Robert, but he's not in right now. Okay. So he'll call you back. So he called her, but she wasn't home. So this is a long time ago, when people didn't have cell phones. So she calls back. And the person in the office, she asked for Robert. And the office person says, Robert's not here now. And so she says to the office person, I guess this means that I shouldn't be coming to Zen Center. I wasn't meant to come to Zen Center. And the office manager, the Zen monk, said, no, I think what it means is Robert's not here. You know, so, you know, we often make things more complicated. We add meaning. The adding of meaning to things is part of this complication. So in terms of the way we tease apart the meaning we add to it. And sometimes the second arrow, the agitation, and, you know, is the meaning we add on top of it. So you can probably understand, maybe I can explain now why this is important for a variety of reasons. One is, it's just important for being free and not being caught by everything, learning how to stay balanced and clear and understanding what's going on without being entangled with things. And it's a very important thing. But in meditation also, in addition to that, meditation is also about sitting and being present and being present in a calm, relaxed, enjoyable, meaningful way. And it's hard to settle into that calm, relaxed, meaningful, settled way if we're constantly being pulled into those second arrows, into the meaning-making mind, into the predictions, into the stories we have. And every time we have an emotion, if it becomes like, you know, a volcano, or every time we have an emotion, it becomes like, you know, major newsflash, and we have to kind of, you know, somehow fix it. It's hard to settle down. So if we can have this attitude or this approach where we give permission for ourselves to be how we are, we're radically allowed to be who you're radically allowed to be who you are. Isn't that a great thing? I hope it's great. Just you're okay be where you are. And because of that, you're not going to get entangled with all this, you know, shenanigans your mind can come up with. You're okay, there it is. Okay, there's my mind, that's what it does. Let's go back to the breathing. Let's stay relaxed and calm. Let's go back to the breathing and relax and settle in. And let's not get off track. Just because I have some sadness, yeah, I've recognized it. It's not that strong. But usually, whenever I'm sad, I'm ready to call 911. But this is not the time for that. Let me just be sad without calling in the troops. Does that make sense? So the idea of trying to actually, what I'm talking about today can sound kind of complicated, but what I'm trying to do is actually do the opposite, is try to be simpler and simpler and not so complicated with things. And so the meditation practice can just be kind of settled and settle in and you know, just kind of stop spinning your marbles. Does that seem okay? Okay. So I'll stay afterwards if anyone have any questions. Both Tanya, who the manager today, and Richard, who's also manager today, they both have lots and lots of experience in this practice, and they can answer probably any questions you have as well. And then next week, we'll do mindfulness of thinking. And it's an important part of life as well. And we don't want to make anything the enemy in this practice. And there's plenty of meditators who think that thinking is the problem. You know, if only I didn't think, then I could meditate. And, you know, but we don't want to make anything the enemy in this meditation practice. So part of mindfulness is to learn how to be mindful of thinking also. And so we'll talk about that next week. Thank you.